to A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Welcome back to another episode. Today, Dad and I are talking about using divination as a tool for personal growth. Divination is the practice of seeking knowledge of the future or the unknown. But for Dad and I, we tend to use it as a tool for personal growth, allowing for us to reflect on situations, feelings, things that are going on in our life, and look at them in a new and unique perspective. Dad and I will each talk about our preferred methods of divination, mine being tarot and his is I Ching, and I'll briefly touch on astrology as well. I really hope you enjoy this episode and I'll see you on the other side. All right, Dad, back for another week.
It's good.
How are you doing?
It's hot in the summer.
Yes. It's hot in the summer. And it's getting, I feel like it's hotter than it used to be too. When I was a kid, I don't remember it being this hot for this long. You know, we used to get like a week where it was above 90, and now it's like a month or 6 weeks that it's above 90. It's a lot.
As I always say, global warming's a bitch, right?
It's true.
I didn't finish.
Oh, okay.
Global warming's a bitch if it were real and not a Chinese hoax.
You think it's a Chinese hoax?
No,
funny?
No, that's people really say that.
Oh, I know people say that, but you don't believe that.
Right. I'm being sarcastic to those
people. Okay, good.
See, this is what happens when I try humor. So, what are we up for today?
So, today I want to talk about using divination methods as tools for personal transformation and growth. So, I thought about this idea. I was teaching my tarot basics class this week, and I had a few students and some of them, two of them in particular, were from more of a Christian background. And so they had been talking about how, you know, this was really stepping outside the box for them and they had a lot of apprehension. And I do, you know, they said they were scared. And I was like, okay, well, I get that a fair amount. And for me, it just seems odd because the way that I teach it and the way that I use tarot and astrology and divination methods is as a tool for personal growth and as a way of checking in with ourselves and a way of getting to know our unconscious and a way of thinking of things in a different way. And so it kind of led me down this path. And I was sort of looking into, you know, what other people were sort of saying about that topic. And I realized that there wasn't a ton, you know, and I couldn't find any articles that were from like sources, you know, like we're really sticklers about sources, but I did find one guy, and I mean, this is his blog, but he seems, I like the way that he says this. So he's the Artemisian, theartemisian.com.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a guy, but I like the way that he states this. He says, "I see divination as the art of activating archetypal consciousness and interpreting its forms. This process serves as a catalyst, energizing and drawing up unconscious knowledge. We project insights that emerge onto the medium we interact with. The clouds, the bones, the tea leaves. It doesn't matter what the divination method is. The stream of understanding carries the same numinous qualities that all unconscious contents provide." So that,
wow.
that led me into this activating of archetypal consciousness. I liked that phrase. It was interesting, and interpreting its form. So what I like about that is that I do see that, I feel like, when I'm doing tarot or astrology, and that it sort of helps us to relate to these the archetypes and relate to different unconscious factors in our lives. And I thought that it might be fun for us to go talk about sort of our divination methods. So I'm really into tarot and astrology, as I've talked about, and you've sort of settled on the I Ching, which is fun. And I know you don't know much about mine, and I don't know that much about yours. So I thought we could talk about it and how we use them in our personal development rather than as these ways that they've been seen forever, which is a fortune telling, right?
Good.
And I get that a lot at markets where I'm more open and there's a lot of people where people say, you know, ooh, can you tell the future? And I'm like, that's not what I do. I'm not a medium. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a fortune teller. I'm here to help you to relate to yourself in the here and now. That's what I do.
Good. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. You like that?
I do. I can't think of a better way to put it. I think really helpful to people to get away, right, the idea of the fortune teller, which is kind of an archetypal image, right? I mean, the fortune teller.
Right.
That is really ancient also. I mean, it goes way, way back. There's sort of always been people doing divination since there were people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that the person back then, that sort of archetype is also linked in with just sort of the guider, you know, like the person who guides us, and that
well, I believe the term for that would be the shaman.
The shaman. Okay. Yeah. I
and
you
know
that.
Shaman is ancient, as in, you know, in the community there have always been certain people who are weird.
Certain weird.
Certain people who don't relate to the community the way other people relate to the community. You know, I mean, it's often been associated with mental illness.
Oh,
I mean, the idea that the people who were shamans were channeling their psychosis. Because also, you know, just as a certain distribution in the population, there's always a percentage of people with major mental illness. And again, that's human. That goes all the way back. But you could say a really helpful thing is that prior to the industrial age, the community had a role for people.
Right.
They
right.
weren't ostracized or thrown in mental asylums. There was a role that they could play.
That's good. Nice.
And yeah. That would be like being a shaman.
Okay. Or a fortune teller.
Right. But not to, you know, get too heavy on the mental health aspect, because I mean, that's, you know, medicalizing, you know, medical languages. And it's not right. I mean, you also have to say some people are very intuitive, or some
right.
people have access to what your first guy was calling archetypal consciousness.
Yeah.
And that's not a mental illness. You know, that's a human capacity.
Yeah. I also see it as like pattern recognition as well.
Which is intuition.
In the
Jungian wheel of types, the intuitive intuition is pattern recognition. And that's one of its aspects. The technical definition of intuition for Jung is perception via the unconscious. Not perception through the senses. That would be a sensation type.
Right.
But perception via the unconscious. That's intuition. And I get when we're talking about divination, that's what we're talking about.
Right.
Perception via the unconscious. So your guy, when he talks about access to archetypal consciousness, I really liked pretty much everything you said. The concept of archetypal consciousness is a bit of a stretch in the sense that
There's the inherent unknown, right? The Kantian boundary,
We have
right?
the Kantian boundary. So I think, like we spoke about in the episode on synchronicity, there's a new language in consciousness studies that talks about local consciousness and non-local consciousness. So I would say I like the term access to non-local consciousness
Okay, yeah, nice.
rather than access to archetypal consciousness, because I mean, I don't know what that is, archetypal consciousness. But we start to have some insight into what non-local consciousness would be, but that gets into the whole theory of consciousness itself, and then sort of a new theory that consciousness is endemic in the universe.
Which I love.
So mostly when we talk about consciousness, I correct it now, and when I myself talk about consciousness, I say ego consciousness to make a distinction. And I'm not talking about non-local consciousness,
Or collective
so
unconsciousness.
or the collective. And so when people say, right, have these experiences and expand your consciousness, see what I mean? It's like, well, if consciousness is endemic in the universe, it's already expansive. What you mean is expand your ego consciousness.
No, I do
And
like that differentiation.
yes, I mean, you can do that. So
Nice.
your original question, having to do with using divination as a form of self-growth
As a tool for self-growth.
as a tool for self-growth. And I guess so. I guess so. But I mean, I really have to start off by saying the biggest tool for self-growth is going to therapy,
Oh, well, yeah, definitely
right?
having a professional guide you through.
And then, in the Jungian perspective, I mean, the biggest tool for self-growth is analyzing your dreams.
I
So,
can
I
see
mean,
that.
it isn't that people come into my office and I say, how you doing today? Oh, I want to work on my self-growth. I say, okay, let's do the I Ching and see, where you are.
But you could. I mean, you could use tarot or you could use astrology. You
And
could talk
then
about
they
those
would
things.
say, are you a fortune teller or an analyst?
That's why I'm trying to change the stigma, Dad.
I see. I see.
That's awesome.
So I feel like I have to have that preamble to this, well, it's a couple of things. I mean, there is no shortcut to self-growth.
No,
No
absolutely
shortcut.
not.
So if you think you can throw the I Ching and then find your direction and your growth and just go and not do any work, see, that's a shortcut. And there are no shortcuts.
No, you still have to do the work.
You do. So that's one caveat. And the other caveat, you said that, at the fair you met these Christians who were wanting to do tarot for the first time. And
Yeah, the class I taught,
the
yeah, who
class, the
came to the they
class.
came to the
They
class
came to
to
the
do it.
class, right. So
I
see, you
mean,
see, there's something in their self-growth that is pushing them their boundaries,
exactly.
which is good. But they said they were scared.
Yeah,
And
they said that there was, yeah, that stigma around it, that it was
there's this,
evil and stuff
yes,
like that.
there is the stigma. I think it's also natural, unconscious, to be scared of divination.
And
I mean,
I do say that
because
when people say that they're scared, because it's like, well, we're talking about things that are in your unconscious already, and if you're not ready to talk about those things, then don't get a reading,
Well, I'm an analyst, and I would
Oh,
say
yeah.
if it turns out that you're trying to talk about something you're not ready to talk about, your ego defenses will kick in and you will find a way to deflect and not talk about it.
That's true.
And again, that's good. That's all okay. There's an analytic rule that we don't set out to break people's defenses.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
It would be a little brutal.
A little counterproductive.
And also a little bit that if you, those defenses are there for a reason, and if you break them down, you don't know what's going to happen. So actually, it's better to have a process of natural growth.
And let those
And
come down
that they
naturally.
come down naturally instead of being broken up with a hammer.
Yeah, that
So
makes sense.
it, I mean, divination is scary because, I mean, in the long run, it is, depending on your ego attitude, scary to confront, I would say, the reality of the psyche. Well, that's Jung's phrase, the reality of the psyche. And then in the way that we're talking about it today, it's scary for local consciousness to confront non-local consciousness.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Right, like the thought that there is consciousness way beyond my own personal consciousness is a little scary.
It's relieving, but to other people, I could see
Yeah, ah, very
that
good.
it
Relieving,
would be scary.
reassuring.
Right, exactly.
Yes, but you gotta be there, in
Be
that
ready to have that.
attitude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I see that big difference when I'm doing more like witchy markets or oddities markets. It's oh, people are always just like so amped, but sometimes I just do like regular farmers markets, and those are tough because there's a lot of people are like, "Whoa, wait a minute." Oh, but I think we could maybe dive into some specifics. So, like I said, there's a lot of different ways of divination, right? So I like tarot and astrology. You like I Ching. There are reading tea leaves. There's scrying in mirrors. There's even like you could scry, which is like looking, right? So we can look into all sorts of things. Like you can do it with a flame. You can do it with clouds. You could really use that. You know, there's a pendulum is a thing that some people use. They have a pendulum and a pendulum board.
Oh yes.
And that's a like a little weighted thing on a string, right? Yeah, and it
I
like
know
swings back and
people
forth.
who've done that, and that reminds me, dowsing.
Oh, and dowsing. Yeah. It's another way.
I mean, not just dowsing to find water,
Water,
right?
but
I
yeah.
mean, you hold, the stick. There's a
Oh,
word
and it
for it.
says yes or no, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah, you ask it
Yeah,
yes
I've
or
seen
no,
that.
and it moves left or right, and it's a little like a Ouija board.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit like a Ouija
And
board.
a Ouija board is also a form of divination, right? Except it's kind of, well, it's kind of collective. I mean, well, I guess you can do a Ouija board
Do it by
all by
yourself.
yourself, yeah. So you're right.
Interesting.
There are
Yeah.
many
Many
forms.
different forms, but
So
the ones that
how do you do
I'm,
it?
familiar with, tarot. So tarot is a deck of cards. There are 78 cards. There's the minor arcana, there's court cards, and then there's major arcana. And so the arcana is broken up to the minor, which tends to be more day-to-day kind of stuff. And then the major tends to be more overarching themes in our lives. And then the court cards are like if you look at a regular deck of cards, it's the Jack, Queen, King. It's that. So I use them as energies that we're trying to embody in our life. I know in more traditional tarot, it's like in people in your life, but because of the way that I teach and the way that I use tarot, everything is about self-reflection. So I sort of turn those energies inward when I'm doing it. For me, when I'm doing readings, especially personal readings, so I keep a book, I have a journal, and I pick one card every day, usually in the morning, like when I'm having my coffee, and then I sort of spend the day with that card. And I think about how those energies are playing out in my life and what ways that do these relate, what situations are going on where I need this kind of energy. And I just find it to be a really useful tool for sort of checking in. You know, sometimes things come up that are really nice and lovely, and other times, you get the tower card, right? And so it's like, think about what in my life needs to be restructured or broken down, things like that. I always say there's no bad cards, that there's challenging cards. And I say the same thing in astrology. And I say that because we need to have challenges in our life, right? Because if everything is always hunky-dory, again, we don't grow. We need those challenges to grow in our life. So, again, if you're interested in tarot, you could take my tarot class, but there's a million different tarot. I actually saw a thing that somebody said they were a certified tarot reader. And I was like, what the heck does that mean? Because there is
Yeah,
no way,
I
like,
have
what
no
do you
idea what
certify?
that would mean.
Certified by who exactly? So if
The
you are,
National Tarot Association or some,
it's
I
not a
mean,
National Tarot
I all right,
Association.
well, what do I?
It's so funny to me. It's like saying you're a certified herbalist. It's the same thing. Like they're not, you're not certified by any sort of legal entity here. Yeah. But I do find that that's it's a really good way to check in. And so I'm thinking here, I might just pick a card. I have a deck in front of me. And so I recommend if you're interested in getting started that you start with the Rider-Waite deck. So there's lots and lots of different decks out there. Tarot is that specific structure of the minor and the major and the core cards. And I always recommend starting with Rider-Waite because it is like the original, it's the OG. There are decks that are older, but this is the standard for all modern tarot decks. So learning the cards in the Rider-Waite, then you'll know going into any other deck, you know, like the Five of Cups is the Five of Cups is the Five of Cups. It's always going to have the same themes. So I'm saying Five of Cups because I picked that one. I'm going to show you that if it'll let me. Oh, it's blurring it out. So the Five of Cups has a person standing, looking at three cups that have been spilled over, and there's two cups still
Wow.
standing. This brings up a lot of emotions, and for you know everybody that looks at it, because it's about being in despair. Our cups suit is all about emotions.
I was going to say he looks, or she, or I mean,
A, yeah.
a hooded figure in a cloak, right? And it's a black cloak, and
It's a black cloak, yeah.
yeah.
And so this is all about focusing so much on the emotions and drama in front of you that we're missing what's behind us. I call it the glass half empty card. What I would do, if this is my card for the day, is that I would think about the ways that I'm seeing things as half empty. Where am I wallowing on in sort of wallowing in despair, being a negative about things? Where am I missing gifts in my life? And so I would just be thinking about this kind of thing all day. And one of the things that I like about this card is the little bridge in the city in the background. It's hard because it keeps blurring out. I'm sorry.
Yes.
And so what I like about tarot is that there's all these different levels to it because we have the things going on in the foreground, the middle ground, the background, things like numerology, right? So five and numerology, we're in the middle. There's sort of chaotic. All the fives in the tarot are very chaotic. But we have this river with a bridge, and we see that rivers, water, always talking about emotion. And there's that bridge. So it's like we can get over the water. There is a way out for us to be get out of this extremely emotional situation. And the city behind us
Huh.
means that we have people to help us on the journey. So there's a lot to learn from such a little card, right?
I was gonna, like, all the tarot cards then have kind of a foreground and a background.
Foreground, middle ground, and background.
And
There's very
they're
few that are,
important,
yes,
right?
they are. They're very important. And that's why I see them as such an interesting tool and why I always recommend to people starting out to do one card a day. Start with one card because you look online and there is literally a tarot spread for everything. Like because it's spring, tarot, you know, spread because it's the full moon, it's a tarot spread because it's Tuesday. Like there's literally a tarot spread for everything and it gets really overwhelming. And so I see a lot in like Facebook witch groups and people are like, oh, I did the spread. I have no idea what it means. And it's like, yeah, because you're starting out and you pulled seven cards. Like it's too much to start out with. So starting out, you know, start with one card and spend the whole day with that card and really take in absolutely everything about it. And that way you'll over time, right, learn what each of the individual cards mean. But it's always good to take a class to jumpstart everything. So again, pitch for my class if you're in the New England area. But so again, going back to the personal growth, right? This card brings up things in the individual and in me or the person who's pulling it that we might not have thought about otherwise. We might be thinking about a situation in a certain way, be stuck in a certain thought pattern about something. We pull a card about the situation and it's like, oh, well, I didn't think about that before. I didn't think about it in that way or that perspective. And it opens up just the flow of being able to think of things in a different way. And so for me, that's why I think it's been a really good tool on my own personal development, because it gives you that opportunity to really just sort of move things around, move your ideas around and shift what
you're
thinking.
It's like the non-local consciousness in the synchronicity and the act of divination.
Yeah, exactly.
Confronts the ego with a different perspective.
Exactly. Because your ego says, no, it's like this. And then the card goes, well, why don't you try thinking about it another way?
And that might be why it's scary, right?
Exactly.
Is that there
so
is
stuck.
A stuck and mm-hmm. then to have another way, well, look at it this way. Yeah.
Yeah. It can be really useful. And then I also recommend always, always to my new students that you write it down. So I always quote the guy that I'm forgetting the name of from Mythbusters. And he says, the difference between science and fucking around is writing it down. And so that's why I always tell people to write it down, right?
Okay.
You've got to write it down, because that way you can see the growth and the development over time. And things also happen where you, like, you'll pick the same card a lot. Like there was a point where I got the Five of Pentacles, which is all about like missing help right behind you and sort of like misery loves company kind of thing. And so I kept picking that card. Like I got it maybe 13 times in a month. So like 13 out of 30, like that's like super weird. And I realized after a while that I had really been dragging my ass and complaining a lot. And that I just needed to like look around and find somebody to help me with it. I was being really stubborn and not accepting help about things. And so I found it, you know, really interesting to look at the patterns of what I'm picking and how I'm relating to the card. Because, you know, you just write a paragraph. You don't even have to write a few sentences. You know, you don't have to write a novel every day looking at the card, but just having those little check-ins and then being able to look back at, you know, a certain time period. Like now I could be like, oh, well, I know, you know, this month in 2020 was really, really hard. I wonder what I was going through then, you know, and then I can just sort of check back and be like, oh my gosh, look at all these cards I was picking and all these things I was feeling and look how much I've grown since then. And it's just really fun. I found an old notebook the other day and it was really fun to look through it and see all the things I was going through.
Yes. Fun would be one word.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes it's a little
fun for us.
Disconcerting. Like, oh yes, that I forgot.
Right.
I would, yeah, the Jungian thing, you know, with dreams is actually, we prefer to work with the dream series, not just a single dream.
Right. Yeah.
So back to what you're saying, it is, yeah, you need to write down your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then the series would be a number of dreams on the same theme over a period of time, like several years. And then because you have them written down, you can see the growth and development from when that particular issue started in a dream and then 5-6 dreams later, the way it appears now.
Right.
So
again, writing it down. I know that's hard for a lot of people, but you know, things have gotten really easier to write things down with having our phones right next to us. And I like a physical journal for my tarot for some reason, but for my dreams, I literally just have voice memos. Like, that's what I have.
Right. That people tell me, right? Oh, I can't remember my dreams. You know, I'm like, yes, you can. You have to give it some intentionality, and you can, and then you have to write it down somehow, right? Not
exactly
in olden days, you know, on a scroll, write
on a
it down,
scroll.
But you. Right. People, you do voicemails and voice to text. I mean, there's so many ways. So there's really no excuse. See,
at this point, exactly.
Not to write it down.
Yeah. But if having a nice, you know, journal motivates you, then go get yourself a fancy journal and write it down. But yeah, so that's writing it down, I guess, is a key factor in a lot of things. It can be really hard for people. Well, anyway, Dad, let's dive into the I Ching. Maybe you can tell me how that works and how might somebody use that for personal growth.
Okay, let's see. I mean, the I Ching is an ancient Chinese oracle related when it was written down to Taoism. So that's like 500 BCE. But like many things, I mean, there's an oral tradition long before something is written down, much less organized, systematically organized. I mean, that takes time, which is what the I Ching is. So that what's written down, there are the original hexagrams, as they're called, and hex, the Latin meaning six.
Six,
So that a hexagram is six lines, little block like a square, of six lines, in which some are unbroken lines and some are broken. So there's like a dash in between, and some are unbroken. And mathematically, that forms 64 different possibilities when you have six lines. Like you could have one hexagram that all lines are unbroken, just six of them. Or you could have another one where all six of them are broken lines, right? And that's each one is a different picture. And then a combination. The bottom three are completely unbroken, the top three have the dash, and that turns out to 64 combinations.
So
So,
if you buy an like a I Ching set, you get like a board and some sticks that you
no,
throw. What
well,
does it
no,
look like?
no.
Give me a an audio picture of that.
Yes, you get the book called the I Ching, which is in Chinese, apparently, it means the Book of Changes.
Oh, I love
So
that.
there's another concept in there, and I prefer to use the one by Richard Wilhelm, who it was a scholar, a Chinese scholar, who brought the I Ching to the West for the first time, somewhere I think in the early 1920s, and then he became acquainted with Jung and introduced Jung to the I Ching. And then they sort of did it together. And so by bringing it to the West, I mean, he brought the Chinese, he was a Chinese scholar, and then he translated it into German. And of course, once being translated into German, it was able to be translated into English. Because there is an interpretation for each of the 64 hexagrams. And so what you get in the book is that it starts with, hexagram number one, and it goes all the way to hexagram number 64. And each one has a text that, this is all from Wilhelm, right, is the traditional Chinese, and it tells you the Chinese name and the association, and it gives you an interpretation. So we can do that. And then the other thing in the book, and about the I Ching, the lines, and the why it's called the Book of Changes, has to do with sometimes, let's say when you're doing the coins, it's a different method for throwing the gyro sticks, but we use coins. So if you're throwing three coins, sometimes you get three heads. And sometimes you get three tails.
True.
And so if throwing a head is 3 points, that makes a nine. It, only if it's three heads. And then if a broken line is 2 points, then that three in a row of tails would be a six. So those are called the changing lines. And then it comments if, like, if one of your lines, so it's not only odd number, even number, there are two special numbers, which is essentially the nine and the six. The statistics of the laws of chance, like what is the chance of throwing three heads? What is the chance of throwing three tails? See, so
Right.
those lines have a special meaning and the book. So in other words, you'll throw it and you'll say, oh, okay, here is hexagram number 30. And that's the match. It does have a little pull-out chart that has all 64, so that you can go through and quickly identify, like, now which is mine? Like, where is it? Right? Instead of thumbing through the entire book to find the one that
Right.
looks like
Look at the
yours,
chart.
you need the overview. Yeah.
Okay. So you're
And,
it's six coins that you're throwing?
no, three
It's
coins.
three coins. Okay.
But six throws of the three coins.
Six throws of three
So,
coins.
for instance, I like to
Okay.
use quarters, and somebody, there's different kinds of money. Coins that feel heavy, feel nice,
Yeah, okay.
like throwing dice or something, I mean, you
Yeah.
shake your hand and then you throw.
Okay.
And what you do then is you write down. Okay, I threw two tails, one head.
Okay.
And remember, if a tail is 2 points and a head is 3 points, then two tails, that's four, right? Two and two.
Okay.
And one
Yeah.
head is a three, so that's
It's three,
seven.
seven.
Seven
Yeah.
is an
Odd.
set odd number, and that means it's a broken line.
A broken line. Interesting. Okay. So I like
No,
that the
I'm
modern.
sorry, I have it backwards.
Okay.
Odd numbers are unbroken lines.
Oh, okay.
E even
Even
numbers
numbers are broken
are
lines.
broken lines. And then
Okay.
since you're doing a hexagram, you have to, it took me a while to get this straight. You build it from the bottom up. So your first throw is the bottom line.
Bottom line. Okay.
Your second throw is the second line going up. And then
Okay.
your last throw is the very top line, the sixth line. Does that make
Okay.
sense? So
That
you
makes sense.
throw and you start at the bottom.
And it
So the
builds this
and it
hexagram.
builds a hexagram. And then the method is that you start with a question before you throw.
Which is interesting to me. Yeah, because with tarot, I don't start with a question. We just, whatever comes up, comes up. And so with this, we have a specific purpose that we're talking about.
And so I was looking up when you were asking about for personal growth, right? I mean, and I did find onlineclarity.co.uk. This person is very knowledgeable about the I Ching. And so he has a nice little chart here about questions you could ask about making a decision, a question you could ask about
Oh.
relationship, question you could ask about forming intentions,
Nice.
questions you could ask about growth.
Okay.
So there is a way to do it. And it, for instance, I'll just read what he says about questions about growth, right? And he says it's hard to think of a question that doesn't fall under this heading, really.
Nice.
Every reading is about greater awareness and connection.
Nice. I like that.
Possible questions for self-awareness and growth would be, please show me an image of myself at the present. How do I change my reaction to this something in specifically? Why do I feel this way? And then a fourth one, please give me a guiding principle for the coming year of my
Ooh.
life.
Wow.
And then he, okay, this is where it gets dicier, right? You get into, when you're ready, you can ask, what is my calling?
Oh.
Which can bring an extraordinary release of energy. Especially
Wow.
powerful combination is to ask two questions, one about your calling and one about your unique gifts.
Oh.
That would be two readings tend to work together in revealing ways. I don't know, right? But it's interesting at any rate.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. I don't think I still don't think I know quite enough about it,
Well, so I
as
tell you
far
what.
as practical application.
All right, we're going to do the practical. I think, even though it's scary, I'm going to ask the question, what is my calling?
For you or for me?
For me.
For you.
No, I am not going to put you in that situation.
Oh, I'd
No,
be fine, but
I'm
okay.
allowed to do it for
Sure.
myself. And then what'll be interesting is that I'm pretty sure I know what my calling is.
Well, I mean, at this point in your life.
That's right. But so the method is I'm going to take my three qu quarters and I'm going to throw six times and I'm going to get an even or an odd number, and I'm going to write down
Write it down.
the numbers. And the first throw is the bottom line, and then build it up to the
To
top
the
line.
top.
Okay? And then we'll see what we get.
All right.
All right.
Well, I can edit it if you want to.
We'll let people hear the first throw because there's a sound, right?
Oh, there's some ASMR to this,
Well,
yeah.
let's see. Did you
Oh,
hear it? Did
nice. Yeah,
you hear
I
the
did. That was
sound?
nice.
And then see, this is how you do it. And what happened? I got two heads and a tail. So I write that down.
Two, three, three, and two.
Two heads, one tail. And as I said, the head is worth 2 points and a tail is worth three. I had it backwards when I
You had
was
it backwards. Oh, okay.
right. A head is worth 2 points and the head is
Tail is worth three, you said, right?
right. Tails of so if I got two heads and it's worth 2 points each, that's a four. And then one tail is a three, which now equals seven. Seven is an odd number, so that is an unbroken line,
Unbroken line.
is the bottom line.
And then we're going to do that five more times.
Yes, we are.
Right, we're back. We've made our throws here for the I Ching.
Yes,
Let's see.
so we've done our throws again, starting from the bottom. So the first throw was four and three is a seven. That's an unbroken line. The second throw was exactly the same thing, a seven, two heads and a tail. And then the third line, it's switched, right? One head, two tails, which is an eight. So that is a broken line. Back to two heads, one tail, which is a seven. That's an unbroken line. And then two heads and a tail, and then the final one, three heads. Each triad, there's the lower and the upper triad of the hexagram, which then on the chart, when you're trying to find your hexagram, it has the columns going down that say the lower, and that's the lower triad. And so it shows every possible combination of broken and unbroken in a triad, so three. And then at the top, across making columns going down, rows, like in a spreadsheet, right? Same thing. It has, I know that my bottom, which was unbroken, unbroken, broken, is called tui, or however you say that in Chinese. And my top triad was unbroken, broken, broken, which is chin. So
So
you
two chin.
two on the bottom, chin on the
Chin on
top.
top.
So when you go out across the spreadsheet, so to speak, it says it's hexagram number 54.
And I will find a picture of this to put in the show notes so that y'all can take a look at what we are
All right. And
talking
then
about.
so when then you go to the page that says hexagram 54. Hexagram 54, right? Which had they all have names, and this one is called, and it has the Chinese characters, by the way, if you know Chinese. This is called the Marrying Maiden.
Marrying maiden.
Yes, the
So,
maiden in the process of marrying, because it says it always shows, the hexagram, and you look at it, and so yeah, that's what I threw. I can see, the correct combination of broken and unbroken. And two, the bottom triad is always called the Joyous Lake.
The Joyous Lake.
And Chen, which is unbroken, broken, broken, Chen is called the arousing thunder.
Wow. That seems powerful. Jeez.
And so the commentary begins that in this hexagram, above we have Chen, the oldest son, and below we have Tui, the youngest daughter. The man leads and the girl follows him into gladness. This picture is that of an entrance of the girl into her husband's house. Now, then comes like, what is
What does
this?
that mean?
Right, okay. And there's a thing called the image, thunder over the lake, which is literally what it is, like arousing thunder on top, joyous lake on the bottom, thunder over the lake, the image of the marrying maiden. Thus, the superior man understands the transitory in light of the eternity of the end.
You're gonna have to say that one again. The
Okay.
transitory. That was a lot.
All right, yes, this is the reading of the image of the hexagram. Thunder over the lake, the image of the marrying maiden. Thus, the superior man understands the transitory in light of eternity of the end. In other words, understands the transitory nature of all existence in light of the eternal, as in
The changing, the natural changingness of the world, or
understanding that understanding the transitory nature of ego consciousness or local consciousness in the light of the eternity of the end, in the light of the archetypal consciousness, or the I would prefer non-local
local
consciousness.
consciousness. Wow. Instant. So that's pretty spot on for what we've been talking about today.
All right, and then see, this is part of the reading, right? It's that a girl, this is, China, Chinese rigid society, old days. A girl who is taken into the family, but not as chief wife, must behave with special caution and reserve. She must not take it upon herself to supplant the mistress of the house. The same is true of all voluntary relationships between human beings. While legally regulated relationships evince a fixed connection between rights and duties, relationships based on personal inclination depend in the long run entirely on tactful reserve. How about that?
It's a lot to take in, I think. I wonder what the more modern update is in that. But I do like the transitory and the eternal part. That's pretty cool.
Well, as we were just talking about that,
Well, yeah, no, that's
and
definitely really
also,
cool.
I mean, symbolically, like what I get is that it's the relationship between the young girl and a much older man, and that it harmonious and the foundation of all relationship is harmonious, is. Well, a Taoist and a Confucian principle,
Of
harmonious.
harmony,
So I think actually this relationship between you and I slipped into the reading that this is the quality of this particular moment when we're
Moment.
here doing a podcast between father and daughter.
And talking
It
about
it.
the transitory and the eternal. That's pretty cool. Cool. So, I
Well,
mean, going
yeah.
back to personal development, I could see how that could help people see things in different ways, similar to tarot, where you're taking a situation, and especially with yours, where you're asking a very specific question, and then getting an answer that may change the way that you think about it, or help you change the way that you think about it, or help you see things in a way that you might not have seen them before. So I do see that. That's pretty cool. I don't think I've I don't know if we've ever done that together, so
Right,
that's
I mean
fun.
it would be yes, if the question is what is my calling?
Right.
My calling is to be the eldest son
Which you are, yeah.
and to bring the young girl along and creating harmony. And
Okay.
that is my calling. And it's sort of that's amazingly specific. It's like, well, in this actual particular moment of doing a podcast with my daughter,
Right.
that yes, that is my that is my calling.
Right.
I mean that's kind of what we're doing here. So
Oh, that's
there you
funny.
go. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty spot on. I like that.
So I
Cool.
mean I hope it didn't seem too complicated to throw
I think seeing it helped me. I
the
do
I
think
Ching,
that
yeah.
I'm gonna maybe do some links for people so that they can see it themselves as well.
I mean, so you found out about
Yes, the chart here. Yeah, I
right.
see.
So I mean that's important. I think if you didn't know anything about the I Ching and you bought the book, you might be hopelessly lost.
Right.
But just do what we said. There's the sixth rows, building the lines from the bottom. Then go to the chart and take the bottom triad and the top triad. Find each one on the chart, see where they come together,
Yeah,
and that is
and then
the
read that.
number. That's the number of the hexagram. And
Cool.
then you can make like any other reading. You can make whatever you want to make of the reading, you know.
Cool. Do people, experts, ever get to the point where they don't even need the book anymore, or do they, people always refer back to the book?
I used to throw the I Ching a bit, especially in the major transition when I was like 30. And then on and off, and then no, I haven't thrown an I Ching in 20 years, I would say.
Wow. Time to get back into
Well, I think you'd be a transition. Like
it,
I think I know what moment I'm in and
huh?
where I'm at.
Well, that's good.
Well, it's kind of inflated, maybe, to use a Jungian term. And it might be good to check in to see
Right. To
if
see if it's relating the same way that you think it is.
if it's relating. So like the it's
When
very
you were throwing
specific.
them all the time, though, did you need the book, or did you get to the point where you knew
Oh
if you
no.
threw a certain thing that what it was?
It's impossible to memorize all 64.
Well, I know 78 tarot cards by heart, so.
It's well, good for you.
I know, but they don't have the pictures to help you. Which the tarot cards have the pictures that really help, because just looking at lines and memorizing them, I think would be pretty hard. But I'm also interested in that because with tarot specifically, there is an argument online about some readers have their own interpretation for a card that do not go with the historical interpretation of the card. And so there's a big debate about whether you can do that or not. And for me, it's like that's the rules and the parameters of the game are the cards mean what they mean. And if
Yeah.
you're not using them in the way that they're meant to be used, you're not really using it as a tarot deck. You're using it as an oracle deck, and that's different. So I was interested with the I Ching because if people are like, okay, well, I know these and I have my own, like to me, this set means something specific, but it might not go exactly with what was initially written out for it.
Yeah, I would say
That
that's
would be
exactly the
difficult.
same, right? It's like Wilhelm brought the traditional Chinese interpretation for each hexagram, and it's all written down, the traditional reading of each hexagram. And so I mean, I was thinking it's like you just make it up yourself. You see what I mean? That
Right, yeah.
that's a good question because it. In dream interpretation, it's the same thing, right? It's like, well, somebody says, well, the dream means whatever I say it means, right? And
Right.
I mean, it's your
It's
dream. You can do, I mean, you know,
man.
but in Jungian practice, you know, we talk about the history of the image.
Right.
So, see, and the history of the image is a fact. So
Exactly.
that's not personal. It's like, well, historically, this image has XYZ kinds of meanings and associations. And then there are hundreds of examples of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so in interpretation, we do try to stick to the history of the image.
Right. Even though it could be a little different for someone if their like their mother was named a bird and that bird showed up or something, you know.
Stuff. Yeah. And then there's also, yeah, the personal history
It's different, yeah.
for each person, but there can be a play on that. So I would say, yeah, you memorize the 78 cards, and then I have a vast knowledge of the history of images,
Exactly.
which is required to work with a dream.
Yeah, well, within a certain parameters,
Yes.
you know, because like dreams have certain parameters, tarot has certain parameters, the I Ching, like, and the container that the parameter make is what is the whole point of the exercise. So for me, it's like, particularly when you're reading for other people, like when you're interpreting dreams for other people, it's different than like if I'm doing a reading for myself and I notice something different about the card, it means something different to me. That's a personal thing. But if I'm reading for someone else, for me to input that personal aspect, I think it just doesn't make sense and it doesn't make you a good reader for other people. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I was going to talk about astrology a little bit, but we've been talking for a while. I might just briefly touch on birth charts, and I'm not going to go into specifics, but the reason I love birth charts so much is because it's a way of getting to know ourselves and the way that we do things. For me, like personally, I have a Gemini sun. You're also a Gemini sun. For me, I had never prescribed to that at all. I didn't never felt like a Gemini until I had my birth chart read. And I found out that my Gemini sun is in my 12th house, which is the house of the unknown, of the unconscious, of the darkness, of the underworld. And so everything just sort of clicked when I found that out because I am inside of myself, I am a Gemini. The way that I think, right? I like to think things out. I'm a very mental person, and that is all Gemini is all about, thinking and mental exercises. And I also think a lot about the unconscious and the things in the dark and the things that are considered taboo. And it's a
Right.
major part of my personality. And so finding that out was very enlightening for me. And so I do think that, you know, it whereas the tarot and the I Ching are more about relating to the moment, I like how birth charts are about relating to the way that we do specific things. So it can be really enlightening to find out, like, oh, like for me personally, my Mars is in Capricorn. And it's like, oh, so, you know, Mars is how we do things, it's our action energy. And Capricorn is all about planning and structure, right? And so the reason why I have a planner, you know, is because for me, that's how I get things done is by that organization. So it's just really interesting way to learn about yourself. And so I definitely recommend to everyone to get your birth chart read at some point, particularly if you're wondering why maybe you are in some certain patterns or the way that you relate to things. I have a client who's got almost all Capricorn in her chart. It's pretty amazing. But so like her Venus, which is how she loves and likes to be love and show love, is in Capricorn. And so it's a very methodical, right? And so she had been really upset because her partner, you know, was not methodical at all. And seemingly to her was disrespecting her because he wasn't respecting her plan and her calendar and the way that she had, you know, meticulously plotted things out. And so for her, that was really hurtful, whereas that might not be really hurtful for other people. So just it's I just think it's a wonderful tool to just analyze why we do things in a certain way. Again, plug for myself here. I do this online to via Zoom if you ever want to get your birth chart read. But I thought that I would touch on that as well, just because it's something that I'm so passionate about. But that takes us to, again, we've been talking for a hot minute. So let's wrap up for today. And Dev, thank you so much for doing that teaching, reading. It was very enlightening for me to see it and how it works. And I hope that everyone can sort of, on the witchy side, our witchy listeners, I think that we're all sort of in on this a little bit of using it, but maybe some of our more Jungian read listeners can learn to pick up a more of a divination method and see if that helps you in your personal development. So thanks again, Dad. I appreciate you, and we'll be back next week.
That's great. See you then.
All right. Bye, Dad.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Dad and I had a lot of fun talking about divination today and how we use our different methods for personal growth. As always, feel free to reach out with any questions you might have at ajungianinawitch@gmail.com. You can look up more about us on our website at ajungianinawitch.com. You can find out more about me, Molly, at queenofcupsapothecary.com. And find more from Dad on YouTube on his channel, History of Ideas. So thanks again so much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with another episode.